The Nazi Roots of the Brussels EU, read by Alan Taylor Shearer. Taken from RelayOfLife.org. Chapter 1. Summarizing the evidence. Democracy turns into dictatorship. How the European Union is controlled by corporate interests. The Brussels EU is portraying itself to the world as a shining example of a 21st century democracy. In reality, however, nothing could be further from the truth. In a true democracy, all power resides with the people. The principle of separation of powers between the three levels of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, establishes checks and balances to protect against abuse. This principle has been universally accepted after mankind fought for it for thousands of years. In contrast, the Brussels EU lacks this fundamental principle of separation of powers. Moreover, the people of Europe have neither control over the executive level nor over the legislative process. Worse, the parliament they elect has no means of effectively controlling these branches either. To hide this impetus, Article 225, the so-called fig leaf article, was inserted into the Lisbon Treaty. This clause offers a possibility for the EU Parliament to, quote, request the Commission to submit a proposal, end quote, for legislation. The Commission, of course, can simply refuse to do so. Operating outside the basic principles of democracy, the Brussels EU, by definition, is a dictatorship. The power of the people to determine their government has been transferred to corporate interests. How the oil and drug cartel attempts to control Europe. The Brussels EU portrays itself to the world as a parliamentary democracy, with the EU Parliament playing the decisive role. However, the executive decisions and the drafting of all legislation is carried out by the EU Commission and its staff of over 54,000 people. From their offices in the Commission headquarters, the Baillemont building, and other locations, this paid army of career bureaucrats craft the laws of Europe on behalf of corporate interests. In contrast, the 754-member EU Parliament is composed of politicians from 27 countries at time of writing, who have no controlling power over this army of bureaucrats. The EU Parliament functions as little more than window dressing for the purpose of portraying the Brussels EU as a parliamentary democracy to the people of Europe. The stakeholders of the oil and drug cartel, and how they chose the President of Europe. On the previous pages, we emphasised the fact that the power determining the government of Europe has shifted from the people to the corporate interests, namely the oil and drug cartel. This cartel is well characterised. It comprises the multi-trillion dollar chemical, petrochemical, and pharmaceutical investment interests. This cartel is by far the largest corporate investment group in the world. During the 20th century, this cartel has become not only the dominating economic force, but has also positioned its political stakeholders in the governments of the leading industrial nations of the world. Leading representatives from the financial circles controlling the cartel are the Rockefeller Group, representing the US-based oil and drug interests. This is the largest of these financial interest groups. Built from the 19th century monopoly of the Standard Oil Corporation, it now controls dozens of chemical, pharmaceutical, and oil multinationals around the globe. One of its most prominent ambassadors in recent decades has been Henry Kissinger. Germany and France. The leading export nations of chemical and pharmaceutical products in Europe. The group has its roots in the late 19th century and comprised Bayer, BASF, Hoist, and later their infamous IG Farben cartel. Their modern-day successor companies are the leading investment businesses in Europe today and have been instrumental in building up the Brussels EU. As was widely covered in the media at the time, just days before his appointment, EU President Rompuy was invited for his presidential job interview by the Bilderberg Group, an elite circle of US-European corporate interests under the control of David Rockefeller and chaired by the ex-EU commissioner and drug lobbyist Etienne de Voynen, ending democracy and returning to medieval times. For the disbelieving, it may be helpful at this point to summarise the selection process for the first president and foreign minister of the Brussels EU. 1. The people of Europe were excluded from the decision-making. 2. The new royals of Europe were selected by an elite circle of corporate interests. 3. The selection ceremony took place in a lavish, aristocratic setting at the Palace of the Valley of the Duchesse on the outskirts of Brussels. 4. French President Sarkozy, Nicolas Paul Stéphane Sarkozy, Dinaga Bakosa, the offspring of a petty aristocrat, was the master of ceremonies. 5. The Queen's crown was bestowed upon Baroness Catherine Ashton. 6. The King's crown went to another person whose name reflects aristocratic descent, Herman von Rompuy. Van Rompuy will act as an interim monarch until such time as, possibly triggered by an international crisis, the petty aristocrat himself assumes the throne. In fact, the EU system of governance reverses all democratic achievements of European civilization over the past 1,000 years and throws the entire continent back to medieval times when autocratic monarchs ruled Europe outside of any democratic control. Did the people of Europe give up centuries of democracy voluntarily? For the oil and drug cartel, the Brussels EU is merely an operative base from where it intends to conquer the world using political, economic and, if necessary, military force. Towards this end, the cartel is currently trying to export the undemocratic construct of the Brussels EU to other regions of the world. The African Union is already being modelled after the Brussels EU, including an AU commission. The political stakeholders of the cartel are deceptively parading the Brussels EU as a model of 21st century democracy and peace. For the sheer scope of this global PR campaign, the people of the world may have the impression that the Brussels EU was approved in a democratic election by the people of Europe and that this political body reflects their will. But nothing could be further from the truth. The actual facts cast a characteristic light on the fundamentally undemocratic nature of the Brussels EU, a warning sign for the world. The only country where the people were allowed to vote on the Lisbon Treaty, the enabling act of the Brussels EU, was Ireland, whose population constitutes less than 1% of the total of Europe, and even this vote was the result of a mockery of democracy. In June 2008, the people of Ireland had rejected the Brussels EU construct in a resounding no, but the political stakeholders of the cartel in Brussels decided to ignore this vote. They bribed the Irish government into holding a second referendum and coerced a yes vote, with a staggering amount of money channeled from the stakeholders of the cartel to Dublin. Over 99% of the population of Europe, numbering more than 500 million people, were denied the democratic right to vote on the Lisbon Treaty in a referendum. The stakeholders of the cartel deprived people of their democratic rights. This violation of all principles of democracy by the cartel is no coincidence. Opinion polls conducted across Europe showed a rejection of the Brussels EU construct by a vast majority of voters. The deceptive nature of the Brussels EU is best characterised by the fact that whilst it is hailed by the cartel stakeholders as a hallmark of democracy, the most basic democratic rights are denied in fear of the people. The strategic goals of the cartel. Previously, we summarised what the plans of the oil and drug cartel are for constructing the Brussels EU. Obviously, this bold manoeuvre is not a random exercise, but has profound economic motives. Here, we explain the why behind the Brussels EU. The financial groups behind the oil and drug cartel are interested in controlling giant global markets that affect literally every human life. Prominent examples of this are the areas of food, health, and energy. Over the past century, the oil and drug cartel has expanded its markets into these three areas into multi-trillion dollar investment businesses. The construction of these giant global markets was based on two strategic tools. Firstly, the use of patents as tools for monopolizing markets. Secondly, public disinformation with the goal of keeping the people illiterate about the alternatives. As a result, every person in the industrialized regions of the world today pays around one-third of their disposable income as tributes to the cartel. With the beginning of the 21st century, the cartel faces a fundamentally new challenge. All of its key markets, oil, drugs, agricultural chemicals, and GMOs, are being threatened by new technologies that will ultimately replace the existing monopolistic and patent-based global markets. In this situation, the financial interests behind the cartel know that their multi-trillion dollar business can no longer survive in a democracy. Thus, the undemocratic construct of the Brussels EU is a strategic step towards the setting up of a global dictatorship on behalf of these corporate interests. At the beginning of the 21st century, mankind stands at a crossroad. We have to decide whether we want to allow the oil and drug cartel interests to continue their domination over our lives by the imposition of largely antiquated technologies, or whether we are ready to liberate ourselves from that yoke by taking advantage of new, independent and sustainable technologies such as renewable energies, science-based natural health and organic agriculture. Today Europe, tomorrow the world. 2 months prior to the Lisbon Treaty coming into effect, the political stakeholders of the oil and drug cartel left no doubt about their global ambitions. On October 7th, 2009, the Daily Telegraph newspaper in the UK published an article titled "EU draws up plans to establish itself as world power." If the cartel gets its way, the Brussels EU will be a mere stepping stone towards the cementing of its economic and political conquest of the world. According to the Telegraph article, the first embassies of this undemocratic construct were being planned for strategic locations, namely New York, the seat of the United Nations, Addis Ababa, the seat of the African Union, and Kabul, an area of interest due to the ongoing war in Afghanistan, even before the Lisbon Treaty had come into effect. But long before the Lisbon Treaty had ever been drafted, the cartel was trying to export the political construct of the Brussels EU as a model to expand its control over other continents. The African Union. The architects of the African Union, the AU, have not hidden the fact that the AU is modelled on the European Union, with almost identical institutional structures, including a so-called AU Commission. The permanent seat of this commission is Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, apparently the intended Brussels of Africa. ASEAN. In 2009, leaders of East Asian countries announced that they had laid the groundwork for an EU-style bloc that will cover half the world's population. Their plans echoed similar ones outlined by Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd in 2008. Enforcing drug patents as a key element of global economic control. Historically speaking, global wars have been fought using guns and bombs, with the goal of conquering and controlling other countries. Today, however, the key tools to achieve global control are economic and legal instruments, which are used as a means of conquering not only governments and economies, but also, ultimately, societies and people. The key economic tools of the Brussels EU are patents, in particular patents on chemicals, pharmaceutical drugs, genetically modified seeds, and other high-tech products. Of these, the most lucrative of all are patents on pharmacological drugs. In 2008, for example, total global pharmaceutical sales amounted to $773 billion, an amount that surpasses the combined gross domestic product, or GDP, of the world's 100 poorest countries. As such, it's obvious that when choosing the EU's first foreign affairs minister, the cartel would pick somebody who had experience in this field. Catherine Ashton, in her previous role as EU Trade Commissioner, played a central role in the repeated seizing at European ports of pharmacological products being shipped from India to Africa and Latin American countries. The only reason for these seizures? The drugs were produced by companies in India who specialise in producing generic, non-patented drugs. These generic drugs, the only ones that can be afforded by poor developing countries, threaten the profits of patented drugs manufactured by European pharmaceutical companies. Patents, the key tools to control the world. The significance of patents in the strategic planning of the Brussels EU for world control deserves particular attention. In general, patents are legal documents issued by the relevant government agency in a country that define the right of ownership of a product or technical process. Economic tools to control national and international markets. Political instruments. Through their role in the critical health sector, pharmaceutical drug patents are also being used as strategic tools to control entire countries. A particularly malicious aspect of patents is that they're being used to form global corporate cartels beyond any national or international legislative control. Large multinational companies do not need to formally unite in order to control the market for a certain product across a continent or the entire world. They simply need to stake out their territorial patent claims. Patents allow multinational companies to control entire sectors of societies across continents without being subject to restrictions such as national boundaries. In some industries, profits amounting to trillions of dollars are being channeled to multinational companies without the public being able to identify the corporate beneficiaries. The effect of patents with respect to human health has been especially devastating in that drug multinationals have been seeking to monopolize what is arguably the most critical sector in any society. As a result, for decades, mankind has been prevented from having access to non-patentable medicine that is more effective, safer, and more affordable in the fight against today's most common diseases. To coordinate their global claims, these multinational companies have established a central cartel office, the Brussels EU. The key beneficiaries from the Brussels EU. If one was to take a glance at some graphics that show the key beneficiaries from the political construct of the Brussels EU, the relative financial contributions of taxpayer money paid by each of the then 27 member states at the Brussels EU in 2006 considered the fact that the majority of smaller member states joined the Brussels EU only recently, the total investments from the founding states over a period of half a century dwarf the financial contributions of the newcomers. You would also see the relative number of patents filed annually from within each of the then 27 member states of the EU. The largest number of patents are being filed by a group of countries composed of Germany, France, Italy, and the Netherlands. Collectively, the number of patents filed from these four countries amounts to more than 70% of all patent applications filed in the EU. That's more than double the number from the other 23 countries taken together. It is therefore no coincidence that Germany, France, Italy, and the Netherlands are four of the six founder members of the Brussels EU. The six founding members, together with Great Britain, another leading drug exporting nation, hold the majority of votes both in the Council of Europe as well as the European Parliament. Following the signing of the Lisbon Treaty, the investors in the Brussels EU are ready to collect the return on their investments. There is a remarkable similarity between the ranking of financial contributors to the Brussels EU and the number of patent applications filed from within those same member states. Since patents are valid throughout Europe, it shows that European nations control high technology markets and ultimately life in Europe. The Master Architect of the Brussels EU. Questions that urgently deserve answers are, how could the architects of the Brussels EU build such an undemocratic construct from within democratic European countries, and who were these men? In fact, the key architect of the Brussels EU was Walter Hallstein, 1901 to 1982, a prominent attorney in Nazi Germany. In June 1938, Hallstein participated in the official state negotiations between Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy with the goal of making these aggressive ideologies the basis for a future Europe. In January 1939, only months before the launch of World War II by the fateful coalition between IG Farben, the largest oil and drugs cartel at that time, and the Nazis, Hallstein gave a historic speech outlining in detail the legal structure of Europe under Nazi IG Farben control. In 1941, Hallstein became the Dean of the Faculty of Law and Economics at the University of Frankfurt, Germany. It was no coincidence that Frankfurt was also the headquarters of IG Farben. A few years later, the Nuremberg War Crimes trials revealed that it was from these IG Farben headquarters that the economic conquest of Europe was planned and implemented, with patents being the key legal tools for economic control. In 1950, after having lied to the Allies about his Nazi past, Hallstein became advisor to West German Chancellor Adenauer and the principal coordinator of his foreign policy. As a result of his previous extensive experience in the planning for a Europe under the control of the cartel and the Nazis, he became the key architect of the Brussels EU. On March 25, 1957, Hallstein was one of the 12 signatories of the Treaties of Rome, the founding document of the Brussels EU. In 1958, he was appointed the first president of the EU Commission, a post he held for an entire decade. Walter Hallstein. From 1936 to 1945, Hallstein was a member of the infamous Association of Nazi Law Protectors, the organization built to become the legal pillar of a Europe under the control of the Nazi cartel coalition. Between 1941 and 1945, Hallstein was professor of law and economics in Frankfurt, the headquarters of the world's largest chemical cartel and main Nazi financiers, IG Farben. From 1950 to 1957, Hallstein was the political mastermind of the negotiations that led to the Treaties of Rome. On March 25, 1957, Hallstein was one of 12 signatories of these treaties that founded the Brussels EU. From 1958 to 1967, Hallstein was appointed the first president of the so-called EU Commission. He built the Brussels EU and ruled Europe for 10 decisive years from a giant building with the help of thousands of unelected bureaucrats on behalf of cartel interests. Today's Brussels EU is built upon a series of predecessor organisations that gradually led to the current construct. The first cycle of organisations was completed in the 1950s and included the European Community for Coal and Steel, the ECSC. In 1951, the European Defence Community, the EDC, a project that was rejected by the French Parliament in 1954. The European Economic Community, the EEC, and the European Atomic Energy Community, the AEEC, or Euratom, in 1957. All those organisations had several key elements in common. One, they were driven by the German oil and drug cartel. After the 1945 defeat of the Nazi cartel coalition in an effort to organise its next attempt at the conquest of Europe. Two, the texts of the treaties were prepared by legal stakeholders of the oil and drug cartel, most notably Walter Hallstein. in order to secure the dictatorial structure needed for this conquest plan. Five European countries, France, Italy, and the Benelux countries, were lured to join these communities with the deceptive promise of peace, security, and economic prosperity. The Sicily Six. From June 1st to 3rd, 1955, the decisive preparatory meeting for the European Economic Community took place in Messina, Sicily. The participants of this meeting should become known as the Sicily Six. Gaetano Martino, MD, Italy, the conference host. Formal legal education? None. Before and during World War II, member of the Italian fascist movement under Mussolini, post-World War II career as member of the Sicily Six. Antoine Pinay, France, formal legal education? None. During World War II, member of the National Council of Vichy, the French puppet regime established by the Nazi cartel coalition in occupied France. Joseph Bech, Belgium. Education, law school, profession. In the year of his admission as attorney in 1914, he became deputy of a right-wing party, held various political functions throughout his life. William Bayon, from the Netherlands. Education, law school, profession, business executive, Philips and Unilever, banker and various political functions. Paul Henry Spark, Luxembourg. Education, law school, profession, a few years of private legal practice from 1925 onwards, various political functions. And the Nazi cartel law professor. The limited legal experience of these five founder members of the Brussels EU contrasts with that of the sixth member, Walter Hallstein. By the time of the Rome Treaties, Hallstein had almost three decades of experience in the fields of education, teaching and research at German law schools and institutes, with a focus on comparative international law and economics. Education at the law schools of Bonn, Munich, promotion to Doctor of Law at the University of Berlin. Elite training in comparative international law at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin, financed by the IG Farben cartel. Almost 20 years as dean at the faculties of law and economics at the universities of Rostock and Frankfurt. One look at Hallstein's curriculum vitae documents shows us he was really pulling the strings in crafting the legal basis for the Brussels EU. Hallstein and Project Scorched Earth. How could Hallstein, with his dark background in the Nazi cartel history, become the chief architect of the Brussels EU and the first president of the EU Commission? The answer to this question is strikingly simple. Firstly, Hallstein had to lie to the Allied High Command in post-war Germany about his membership of various Nazi organisations. Secondly, he had to make sure that his numerous publications and presentations as a crusader for the Nazi cartel conquest of Europe were destroyed. The book, The Nazi Roots of the Brussels EU, shows various documents, and one of them is a printout from the German National Library using the search term Walter Hallstein. This, the most comprehensive online library in the whole of Germany, lists the following publications by him. Before 1933, the year the Nazi cartel coalition seized power in Germany, one finds one single publication. After 1945 and the defeat of the Nazi cartel coalition, one can find more than 100 books and publications by Hallstein. Amazingly, between 1933 and 1945, during the terror regime of the Nazi cartel coalition, one can find only one single publication by Hallstein. This absurdly short list of one publication in 12 years deserves an explanation, especially considering the fact that during the period, Hallstein was dean of the law faculty of two major German universities. There's only one explanation for this fact. Hallstein and his cartel accomplices had tried to make sure that none of his speeches and publications as an advocate for the Nazi cartel coalition and its takeover of Europe survived. This policy of scorched earth was a precondition of the political right of Holstein to become the founding father of the Brussels EU. To answer the question, who is the real Holstein for the people of Europe? Well, we've included a special chapter about him. The cartel's patent expert, C.F. Ufels. Obviously, Holstein was not alone in his role as the chief architect of the Brussels EU. He surrounded himself with legal technocrats who had already been instrumental stakeholders of the Nazi cartel coalition prior to 1945. Since the key tools of the cartel to secure its future control over Europe were patents, it's no surprise that Holstein chose, as his right-hand man, an expert on patent law. During the Nazi regime, Karl Friedrich Ufels had been the leading court expert on the Import Patent Court in Frankfurt, Germany, the city of the IG Farben headquarters. In this role, Ufels was familiar with all patent disputes relating to the spoliation by the IG Farben cartel of the chemical industries in the conquered countries of Europe. This fact qualified him, of course, as an accomplice to the cartel's next attempt at the conquest of Europe. The 1946 Allied denazification questionnaire reveals that Ufels was a member of the Nazi Party, the NSDAP, with the membership number 2399061. Because of his Nazi past, the Allied Security Office in 1947 classified Ufels as follows, quote, "This individual was previously found unemployed by military government for any position above ordinary labour," end quote. However, Holstein's judgment of Ufels was in direct contrast to that of the Allied Office. Together with Gerhard Schneidmeier, a member of the notorious Schneidmeier clan of Nazi lawyers, Holstein promoted Ufels within 1 year, 1949, to Doctor and Professor of Law at the University of Frankfurt. 1 year later, in 1950, Holstein appointed Ufels to the position of Ambassador in Brussels and his right-hand man for the construction of the Brussels EU. Politically reliable cartel Nazi becomes founding father of the European court. On December 17, 1941, the Nazi Party head office in Frankfurt, in an official letter to the rector of Frankfurt University, attests that C.F. Ufels is a politically reliable Nazi. Only 16 years later, this devoted stalwart of the Nazi cartel coalition signs the Statutes of the European Court of Justice as a principal architect. We, the people of Europe, have to realise that the foundation of the European Court of Justice, the highest legal organ of today's Brussels EU, has been crafted and signed into law by stakeholders of the Nazi cartel coalition, including registered Nazi Party members. For half a century, the cartel was able to suppress the appalling charade of its political stakeholders. Now that the truth is finally out, however, the democratic legitimacy of the Brussels EU is gone. No democratic organisation and no voter can ignore this criminal past. IG Farben and the criminal history of the German chemical cartel. Who were the cartel interests Holstein, Ufels and their accomplices in grey suits served? The IG Farben cartel was formed in 1925 by Bayer, BASF, Hoist and a few smaller German chemical companies. It was the world's largest company in the emerging fields of dyes, Farben in German, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, plastics and other patented synthetic products. With tens of thousands of patents, IG Farben was the world's largest patent holder at the time. The only step missing for world control was the extension of its patents to monopolize the giant emerging markets of patented synthetic products throughout the rest of the world. As early as 1904, Bayer chairman Karl Duisberg had already called for the formation of such a cartel, setting the explicit goal for the German chemical industry to, quote, rule the world. Towards this end, Bayer and BASF and other German chemical companies were instrumental in supplying explosives and poison gas to the German Imperial Army to launch World War I. In 1918, due to the heroic efforts of the world community, the German army was defeated and the first attempt of the German chemical cartel to achieve world conquest had failed. But the cartel did not give up. Bayer, BASF and Hoist, operating since 1925 as the IG Farben cartel, financed the rise of the Nazi Party and prepared it technically and logistically for the next attempt at world conquest, World War II. By 1942, the chemical industries of half of Europe were under the control of the IG Farben cartel. In 1945, the second attempt for the world conquest also failed. In 1948, several IG Farben directors were sentenced during the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal for genocide, slavery, plunder, and other crimes against humanity. The IG Farben cartel built up the world's largest extermination camp. In return for financing the rise of the Nazis and equipping them for World War II, the IG Farben cartel was the primary economic beneficiary from the conquest of Europe. An example of the close collaboration between Farben and the Nazis was the Auschwitz concentration camp. Financed with a credit of 1 billion Reichmark from the Deutsche Bank and Dresdner Bank, IG Farben built the largest industrial complex in the world at that time in the Polish city of Auschwitz. The IG Auschwitz plant was to produce the synthetic rubber, gasoline and other chemicals for the Nazi IG Farben conquest of Russia and Asia. For the construct of this giant plant, the nearby Auschwitz concentration camp was extended and became the world's largest slave labour and later extermination camp. These and many other crimes committed by the IG Farben cartel in Auschwitz and elsewhere are documented in the records of the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal against leading executives of this cartel. Most shocking amongst these documents are the deadly medical experiments, the majority of which were conducted with patent pharmaceutical drugs from Bayer and Hoist and other IG Farben companies. The Nuremberg Tribunal also revealed that some of the doctors conducting these deadly experiments, including Dr. Vetter, were at that time paid employees of Bayer. With the group to impose the Brussels EU, the cartel exposes its own criminal past. Over the past half century, the oil and drug cartel has done everything possible to conceal the truth regarding its unscrupulous criminal past as the instigator of two world wars. For more than six decades now, the stakeholders of the cartel have paid hundreds of billions of dollars for the cover-up, built media empires for the manipulation of public opinion, had history books rewritten and global news censored, financed and raised generations of politicians from left to right in dozens of countries, placed gatekeepers in important academic disciplines including science, medicine, history, political and social sciences, as well as other key areas of society such as churches and trade unions, etc., and mercilessly hunted those who dared to break the silence. All of this happened for one reason only, to hide the cartel's criminal past until it had successfully completed its third attempt at the conquest of Europe, which, this time round, it intends to achieve via the Brussels EU. The cover-up of the largest crime in history, the cartel's role behind World War II, has cost the cartel hundreds of billions of dollars over the past half century. This staggering amount of money spent by stakeholders of the cartel to cover up its criminal past can only be explained by one fact. The cartel is fully aware that the exposure of its past would destroy the plans for its next attempt at conquering and controlling Europe. The signing of the Enabling Act of Lisbon, along with the coercion of the people of Europe under the Brussels EU, make the publication of the historic documents and facts contained in this book a necessary and timely event. The spread of this information across Europe and the world will expose the cartel's role behind the Brussels EU and prevent the cartel from launching another attempt at world conquest. World War II Conquest War on behalf of the oil and drug cartel. Shown in the book is the title page from the official 1945 report that followed the learning of the US Congress on the causes of World War II. It runs to over 100 pages and unequivocally proves that World War II was a conquest war conducted on behalf of the oil and drug cartel. The goal of World War II was the same as that of World War I, to control the multi-trillion dollar emerging world markets in chemicals, petrochemicals, and pharmaceutical drugs. These official government documents were hidden away in archives for more than six decades, despite being key documents regarding the greatest crime in human history. They were not even published on the website of the US government. Now, finally, you can study them yourself at www.relay-of-life.org. Made public after seven decades of silence, the war crime records of the cartel. We have obtained more than 50,000 pages from the official records of the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal against the IG Farben cartel, and for the first time in more than seven decades, the authentic records, including the horrifying exhibits of this 1947-48 trial against the directors of Bayer, BASF and Hoist and other IG Farben companies, have been made public and are accessible online worldwide. When studying these historic records, you'll realise that you've been systematically deceived about the true cause of World War II, the largest crime in the history of our planet. For example, you'll learn that 1. World War II could not have taken place without the financial and logistical support of Bayer, BASF, Hoist and other IG Farben companies, the world's largest chemical and pharmaceutical cartel at that time. World War II was not primarily fought for national or financial reasons, but on behalf of the IG Farben cartel and its attempt to conquer and control the emerging multi-trillion dollar chemical, petrochemical and pharmaceutical markets across Europe and the world. World War II was not the result of a perverted psychopath by the name of Adolf Hitler. In contrast, Hitler and the Nazi hooligans were the political and military puppets of the IG Farben cartel. According to the prosecution in the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunals, World War II was the result of a coordinated technological, logistical, financial, political and military effort by what the prosecution called the marriage between IG Farben and the Nazis. The Auschwitz concentration camp was not the product of some SS lunatics, but a slave labour camp for IG Farben's giant industrial plant, IG Auschwitz, that was to produce the synthetic fuel and rubber for the conquest of Eastern Europe, Russia and Asia. The third attempt of the oil and drug cartel to conquer and control the world. When reading this book or listening to this audiobook, you may think that the startling information presented cannot be true, for if it were, you would surely have heard about it before. There is, however, a simple reason why you may or may not thus far have been aware of these facts. Since its two prior attempts at world conquest, World War I and World War II, had failed, the stakeholders of the cartel knew that the only way a third attempt could be successful would be if its involvement in the two prior attempts could essentially be eliminated from the memory of mankind. Otherwise, how else do you explain that more than 60,000 pages from the Nuremberg tribunals against the IG Farben cartel were hidden away for more than six decades in international archives? Why did it take the authors of this book to help release the information and publish it online at www.profit-over-life.org? While the military and political stakeholders of the cartel during World War II were held responsible for the death and destruction they caused, the economic masters continued their relentless efforts to achieve their ultimate aim, Towards this goal, they simply finance the rise of a new generation of political stakeholders in key countries. Helmut Kohl, a former BASF employee, was promoted to become German Chancellor, a post he held for 16 years. During that time, he spent billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to finance and build up the Brussels EU. Angela Merkel, his political protege, holds this post today. In parallel, in France, the heirs of the architects of Auschwitz promoted Nicolas Sarkozy to power. After the rejection of the Brussels EU by the people of France and the Netherlands in 2005, these two political executors of the cartel coerced the heads of the rest of Europe into signing the Lisbon Enabling Act. The world on the brink of global dictatorship and World War III. History shows us that there were two preconditions for the attempts at world conquest by the cartel. One, the establishing of a dictatorship in the territory from where the conquest of the world is being launched. The Lisbon Treaty provides the legal basis for this. Two, systematic planning for military actions, including a new world war. The formation of a European army, and when combined with open threats by leading political stakeholders of the cartel to use nuclear weapons, is an unmistakable step towards this. Thus, the historic parallel to the seizure of power by the oil and drug cartel by means of the Brussels EU is the takeover of the German government by the same interest groups three quarters of a century ago. The year 1933 is paralleled by the year 2009, when the oil and drug cartel enforced its Enabling Act. The year 1934 is paralleled by the year 2010, when the dictatorship will show its true face by subjecting key sectors of society under its rule. The Sarkozy-backed plan for a centrally controlled European economy is just the beginning. In light of these facts, the people of Europe and the world need to take action. The success of these efforts will depend upon the following preconditions. The right political analysis. This book is written to provide this. Effective dissemination of the information to the people of the world. And three, the organization of a movement of people who are committed to protecting democracy and peace in Europe and the rest of the world. Preventing history from repeating itself. Since it's obvious that the political representatives of an entire continent, Europe, failed to protect democracy, we, the people of the world, have to recognise our responsibilities and take action. In order to be able to do so, we need to understand history. Twice before, the oil and drug cartel took Europe and the world into the abyss. More than 100 million people paid with their lives as a result of these corporate interests' quest for global control. The 20th century will go into the annals of history as the century of death and destruction on behalf of the oil and drug cartel. And now, at the beginning of the 21st century, we are faced with the situation that the same corporate interest groups are undertaking a third attempt to subjugate the world under its control. This third attempt today is particularly malicious because the cartel is hiding its obvious motives of global control behind the deceptive propaganda of peace. The cartel's political stakeholders are trying to convince the people that the Brussels EU is needed to prevent Europe from repeating the dreadful experiences of World War I and World War II. We now have to make a choice. Either we close our eyes and ignore these historical facts, or we recognise our responsibility to prevent history from repeating itself and act. Clearly, the only way forward is to act. The first step to end centuries of deception that has kept millions of people illiterate about the real culprits behind the largest crimes in history is to share this information with others. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. George Santayana. In this opening chapter of the book, we confronted you with historical facts and information which you may never have heard about. We are aware that some of this shocking information is hard to accept, and we encourage you to conduct your own additional research. Because all the facts presented here are based on historical records, we're convinced that you will find everything in this book confirmed. Once you realise to what extent you, your family, friends and entire generations have been held in complete illiteracy about the essential facts of history, you may ask yourself a decisive question. How much longer do we allow cartel interests to determine the future of our continent? The following will give you some ideas about what you can do, which will be further elaborated in the last chapter of the book. The historical challenge of our time. To correctly assess the current geopolitical situation, we must highlight an important difference between the previous two attempts at world conquest by the cartel and its current attempt. World War I and World War II were attempts by the oil and drug cartel from one country, Germany, to eliminate competition from other nations and multinational companies to dominate the newly emerged market of chemicals, petrochemicals and pharmaceuticals. In contrast, the present attempt at world conquest via the Brussels EU is being pursued so vigorously for a different reason. Over the past decades, mankind has developed technologies that fundamentally threaten the monopoly of patented synthetic products. The products that are threatened currently form the very foundation of the economic power of the cartel. Oil. The monopoly of oil as the principal supply of the world's energy is being threatened by renewable forms of energy, including water, hydrogen, wind, solar, tidal, geothermal, and others. As different as all these technologies are, they have one aspect in common. They liberate mankind from the dependency on oil. Patented drugs. The monopoly on patented pharmaceutical drugs as the principal answer to the world's health problems is being threatened by science-based, effective, safe, and affordable natural health approaches. Patented food. GMOs. The attempt to monopolize and control the world's food supply based on patented genetically modified fruits, vegetables and animals, GMOs, is threatened by the growing popular demand for healthy, fertilizer and pesticide-free organically grown food sources. The meltdown of each of these global markets signifies a loss in the magnitude of hundreds of trillions of dollars. Moreover, the interests behind the cartel have realized that the people of the world are determined to defend these new liberating technologies, making it impossible for them to defend their global patent-based markets in a democratic system. In this situation, the only option for the cartel to protect its economic privileges is to escalate international crises and instigate military conflicts with the goal of establishing its dictatorial rule over the world. The people of the world have to realize that the current attempt of the oil and drug cartel at world conquest is not the battle of one nation against the rest of the world, like in World War I and World War II. The battle lines today are drawn between the financial interests of a handful of corporate shareholders and the health and life interests of billions of people living today and countless others as yet unborn. This is the challenge of our time, but in this historic challenge also lies a breathtaking opportunity. A world for the people, by the people. Since it's obvious that the political representatives of an entire continent, Europe, failed to protect democracy, we, the people of the world, have to recognise our responsibilities and take action. What is needed now is a global movement that protects the inhabitants of this planet today and in the future from being sacrificed to the interests of the oil and drug cartel. The very essence of this movement is to protect the health and lives of millions of people. Therefore, it will be a movement of life. This book provides the historical analysis for the necessity and urgency for such a movement. The lessons of history documented in this book will end the decades of deception that have formed the basis for the rule of the oil and drug cartel until now. This book shows that the desperate efforts by the cartel to cement the Brussels EU and extend its influence around the world are no coincidence. They reflect the fear of the status quo, that it may lose political and economic control of our planet. Alternative forms of energy are threatening to end the tyranny of oil. Similarly, effective natural health approaches are about to end the dependency of mankind upon patented toxic chemical drugs. The stakeholders of the status quo have realized that they can no longer preserve their economic interests in a democracy. The only way that their multi-trillion dollar markets with largely antiquated technologies can be maintained is by resorting to totalitarian forms of government. Thus, the aggressive attempts of the cartel to seize power over Europe and the world, as documented in this book, are not a sign of strength, but of desperation. Why the movement of life will succeed. Understanding the historical analysis regarding the increasingly desperate situation of the forces that have controlled the world in the past is a precondition that the creation of a new world for the people by the people, the movement of life, that has to undertake this historical mission, has two primary goals. One, advance new technologies in the fields of energy, health, and other key sectors of society that dismantle the monopoly of the status quo in these markets. Two, combine the democratization of these technologies with the promotion of political democracy at the local, national, and international level. By working towards these goals, the movement of life will protect democracy, preserve peace, and thereby inevitably overcome the plans of the cartel for another attempt at world conquest. More about the urgency of the movement of life can be found in the concluding chapter of this book. That's the end of chapter 1, but listen out for chapter 2 coming up very soon.